this is something I guess we can all do with all of our friends and with everyone in life, is try and approach things with a perception of grace and understanding first rather than judgment. It's, you just don't know how someone's feeling. Even if they express how they might be feeling, you still might actually not 100% know how they're feeling on the inside.
Welcome to the Inspired to Thrive podcast. I'm your host, Phoebe Lay, and in each episode, I will be sharing with you insights from either an inspiring person or myself to help you thrive and shine online and in person. We talk about all things marketing, relationships, money, business, growth, mindset, and more. So thanks for tuning in, and I look forward to seeing you inspired to thrive. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Inspired to Thrive and Shine podcast. We are very, very, very excited, Danny and I, because today we are going to be talking about ADHD. And before we get... Exactly that. And before we get started, I'm going to introduce Danny, because Danny's a good friend of mine. And Danny is not only a vibrant and bubbly creative, working full-time as a commercial and corporate photographer based in Melbourne, but she was diagnosed with ADHD, the combined type, so inattentive and hyperactive impulsive, in April last year, and has been doing her own research on ADHD for over 2 years now in order to explore both how it impacts adults as well as her own beautiful brain. And she's super passionate about breaking down the common stereotypes of ADHD. And the reason we are having this podcast episode today is because I would love for the listeners to not just have a bit more awareness around ADHD and how it affects different people's minds and how they work, but also for those that do have tendencies to be neurospicy, to be aware that they're not alone and be a bit more aware of some of the symptoms that might come with it and some of the fantastic benefits as well.
Yeah.
Danny, I wanted to ask, as a beautiful neurospicy queen that you are, how did you start your day today?
Honestly, it's like a whirlwind. I will snooze my alarm a few times, and then once I get up, I don't really start thinking probably until a good 20 or 30 minutes. So I'm on medication, so I will take my meds hopefully as soon as I get up, if I don't forget. And they probably take like half an hour to kick in. So that first half an hour, I feel like I'm going to the bathroom and I'm putting my deodorant on, and then I'm going to my bedroom mirror and I'm doing my hair, and then I'll think about something else that distracted me. Then I'll go back to the bathroom and then like start doing my hair. And then I'll be like, oh, I need to put a reminder on. And then I'll go and put a reminder on my phone, and then I'll be distracted by something else. And then I'll be like, oh, I've got to pack my lunch. So I'll put a reminder in to pack my lunch, and then I'll see something else on my phone, get distracted for like 20 minutes. And then end up at work late. It's different every day.
I actually feel every single ADHD person's morning is different. And that's one of the reasons why I share. I mean, regardless of ADHD or not, I think everyone's morning is different. And routine is such an important part of our day, right? Like, without having routine, it's so easy to get really flustered. And I know I used to feel really frantic before I created a rhythm and a routine. For the listeners, I'm not diagnosed with ADHD. I could be, I could not be, who knows? But I do really resonate with a lot of what Danny is going to be sharing with us today. And I feel like a lot of people would too. But before we talk about all of the overwhelm and the stress and the chaos and the craziness of being neurodivergent and all the ideas and thoughts and everything that comes to mind, I would love to know, what is ADHD and what are some of the misconceptions that people have of ADHD?
Oh my goodness, I love this question. I could talk about this for ages because I feel like there's so many and I'm so excited to actually start breaking them down. Attention deficit hyperactive disorder. It's funny because a lot of people can get caught up on the hyperactive part, and I think it used to be called ADD.
Yeah.
And now that doesn't exist. It's just ADHD. I'm not a psychologist, or I'm not qualified to talk about ADHD, but I guess I can talk a lot about experience and what I know and the research I've done. And I follow some really reputable psychologists who are really good at giving information that is accurate. So the inattentive part, I guess, yeah, it can be different for everyone. It could be like you've got a really sporadic, crazy mind and your thoughts are everywhere and you're in the middle of your sentence and you forget what you're saying, which again is probably likely to happen because it's late in the afternoon. Or it might be that you're doing a task and you are thinking about all these invasive, interruptive thoughts come in and you start thinking about something else that maybe happened and that's taking a part of your brain over here. And then maybe you've got a bit of a noise distraction in the office over there. So your brain's over there. So yeah, it can be different. I guess for me, like the inattentive part is that it can be really sporadic and all over the place. And my thoughts kind of jump around a lot if I haven't taken medication or my medication's worn off. But then the hyperactive impulsive part, there's so much I could talk about that. Like the hyperactive part is anything from being like super energetic and extroverted and bubbly and loud to cutting people off mid-sentence. I never used to understand why I did that. I think there was a few people that thought it was a bit rude. And it's interesting, like that part is when you be really excited about something and someone's sharing and you want to show that you get it or you understand or that you've been there, but like you can be really excitable and jump in and go like you might be going, oh, like, you know, so I went to Paris last week and I'll be like, oh my God, I went to Paris too. And it was amazing and da 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 da. And it can be really full on, but sometimes it's that hyperactive part of the brain that's like, oh, I'm really excitable. And, oh, yeah, I get it. I understand. Or like, oh, I feel you. Like I was there too. Or, you know, I had that same experience and I want to like show that I'm there with you or I get it.
Yeah. Like you're making them feel understood and feel like you can relate to them. I feel like a lot of people with ADHD are actually really kind and genuine people. I don't know. I just feel like it's almost as though people that have ADHD also come with a lot of empathy. Yes. Is that true?
Yeah, I think it's true in general. I mean, again, everyone's different, but as far as I know, that all the people I know with ADHD are quite in touch with their feelings. And I guess, yeah, the intensity varies. But for me, I'm a really strong empath. It's so funny. I used to work at Light Center and I would have these customers come in, they'd sit down in front of me and I'd get to talk to them and share with them and then like find out about their plans and start doing some research. But while I was doing the research, they would tell me about, you know, the family they were going to see or the friends that they were going to visit and start telling me these stories. And I just remember sitting there and they'd share these beautiful stories of the family they were going to see they hadn't seen in the longest time. And I would just sit there and start welling up and getting really emotional. And like these were people I'd never met or didn't really know at all. And so I just, yeah, and that was probably 6 years ago. And I remember that always being a part of me was just going, oh my gosh, I feel things so strongly all the time.
Like, yeah,
I feel people's joy,
wow,
people's pain, people's sadness, their like disappointment.
Wow.
It's really interesting. It makes for a wild time sometimes.
I can imagine that it would be really intense. But going back to ADHD, the misconceptions, what are some misconceptions that people have of ADHD? I want to really start with this one because I know that when it comes to ADHD, a lot of people automatically assume that someone's going to be hyperactive or they are going to be completely unable to form a single thought and sentence without different thoughts coming in mid-sentence and changing the topic. And I don't think that's necessarily the case because I, in my own research, have discovered that even though I don't have a lot of thoughts going in my mind all the time, and that could be because of like some of my meditation practice. Like, I'm not sure what it is, but I still think that some of the things that you've shared with me in the past, which we'll talk about on the show, I have really related to, and there's still a possibility because, you know, we've shared about different stories and things like that. So what are some of the misconceptions?
Well, I think as you said, like, I hate to generalize and say a lot of people, but I really do think there are a lot of people who see it as like naughty boys who just run around in school and they misbehave and they're hyperactive and they're really loud. And before it was discovered in adults, it's what used to be known the most for. That was bad grammar, but you know what I mean?
And I think a lot of the time they think boys, like ADHD, yes. Especially 10, 20 years ago, when you heard ADHD in high school, back when we were in high school, it was as though that it's young boys bouncing off the walls. You'd never think that a female had ADHD.
It wasn't known about in adults very much at all. It was known about in kids first. And in fact, the last psychologist that I was seeing let me know that I think it's called the DSM, which is like the official medical, you probably know the official medical book of terminology. It only listed ADHD as existing in adults about 10 years ago. 10 or 11 years ago, I think it was, don't quote me on it exactly. But how crazy is that? Like before that, it wasn't officially recognized in adults as being a disability, because it is, it's a disability. It's a dysregulation in the brain. So I guess, yeah, that goes back to, I guess, your first question as well is, what is it? A misconception would be that it might be an excuse, or it might be something that you can just try harder to get over, but it's not. It's actually dysregulation in the brain and the processes and the way that we think. And it's cool because I've only been diagnosed since April last year, but I'm still on this journey of discovering how it actually really does affect my brain and my thinking and the person that I am and the way that my brain regulates and thinks through things or doesn't think through things every day. So it's really fun, actually. I love learning about it. I love psychology and I love discovering more cool things about my brain or going, oh, this is why I'm unique and this is why I'm different. And it might not be the same as everyone else's brain or the majority of everyone else's brain and how it works. It makes for a fun and exciting time. And, you know, some days you just don't quite know what to expect or how well you're going to do or how well you're going to do a task.
Have you ever thought that maybe ADHD is not so much of a downfall, but it's actually a superpower?
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever gotten through your day and like midway through a task, you're thinking, wow, I am like powering through this. I am so in flow.
Focused.
And hyper-focused and doing things at a million miles an hour, but it's with accuracy. And you're just like, my goodness, a normal person just wouldn't be able to do all of this so quickly and so many different things going on at once. Like, how do you find your work days?
It's interesting. Some tasks can definitely be a big drainer. Like the ADHD brain, it works on excitement, right? It's like that reward.
Dopamine.
Yes, dopamine. We love dopamine. It's funny because like things that are really boring are like crazy boring. Like, oh, shoot me now. Boring. I don't want to do this. Like invoices. Oh my gosh. That's how I feel when I do invoices. I'm like, oh, this is such a drag.
I feel when I do my tax.
Oh, tell me about it. But then other tasks are like you get in your zone and that is your one thing that you do exceptionally well. Like one of my superpowers is I do really well under pressure. So I'm a photographer. I'm really good at shooting weddings because I can't even necessarily explain it in the right words, but I do really well under pressure. And actually that might be a thing for a lot of ADHD people I've heard is like that last minute grind when you know you've got a deadline because we're really time blind, right? Well, that's another thing we could talk about. Time blindness, oh my goodness. But when we're time blind, you know, we can like take our time and procrastinate and go, yeah, we'll just put it off or I'll do it tomorrow. But when you've got a deadline, you're like, okay, this client is expecting this by this time. I know that I'm screwed if I don't do everything in my power to get it done by that time. And so there's something kind of magical that happens in your brain and I'm able to just, yeah, I don't know about you, but I'm able to just like fixate on that and just like go and be like, okay, I'm going to think about this. And my brain just goes like, it's a little hot wire and it just suddenly can make all these decisions exceptionally well. And I'm the most decisive I've ever been. But other times, like you give me an email and it's from a client and it's a situation I haven't had before. And I don't know, maybe it's a complaint or maybe it's a new sort of photography shoot request. And I can sit there for 20 minutes going, like, what do I say? Or can I say this better? Or what's the right response? Or we could do this or we could do that and be really indecisive. So it's really interesting. There's sort of a bit of both.
I think you've really touched on stress and how neurodivergent people deal with stress. It sounds like when there's enough stress, it propels you into productivity. But let's talk about when stress gets too much. What happens? Because for me, in the past, when I am working on way too many projects at once, and I know there's like a part of my brain that just knows there is not enough time. Like I have taken on way too much. And when I didn't have the systems in place before I had my SOPs, my spreadsheets, my documents and
SOPs, what are SOPs?
Standard operating procedures. It is a life changer when you're a business owner. It's basically instructions for anything that's repetitive that someone else can do that you can delegate. I write it in an SOP because like you, I don't want to be doing mundane tasks. It is a dopamine thing because I want to be doing things that are exciting, creative, fun, things that I'm passionate about, connecting with clients. You know, I don't want to be reviewing content as much as I'm connecting with clients or talking to people. I'd rather leave that to my team. So anyway, before I had all of the systems in place, I used to struggle with overwhelm to the point where I would just feel like I needed to just stop and cry in a corner type thing. Not literally, but all on levels of overwhelm. I think that when you don't have the right systems and there's too much stress and pressure, you just can't get anything done. Have you found that, Danny?
Yeah, I think when you don't have the structure of what needs to come first, like that can be really overwhelming when you've got a huge task list and you haven't got any systems in place to know how to look at it and go, okay, what's important? Is this actually important or does it just feel urgent? Like part of the reason I actually got diagnosed was because of that, and was because I was actually finding at work that I have so many different responsibilities between the actual photography, the shoot planning, the post-production, the managing clients from start to finish. I started to get really, really overwhelmed, and I had no systems or structure or procedures in place to deal with that. And so it was interesting because that actually propelled me to asking more questions about ADHD, and one of the people in the office has it. And so I was able to start talking to her and going, hey, like, how do you deal with this? Or what do you think about that? Or has this ever been a struggle for you? And she starts going, hell yeah, that is awful. That thing ruins my day. And then it was funny. And then I ended up doing this meeting with this other amazing client, and we got on the Zoom call, and the first thing she said to me was, okay, so by the way, I have ADHD and da 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 da, so hopefully I don't get distracted, and this is what I want to talk about. So I'm going to talk about this, this, and this. And so this is going to help me stay on track. And I was like, wow, okay, that's another woman I know with ADHD. And it was funny. So it got me thinking. And then I started to realize, okay, there's more women out there than I realized with it. And I, like, some of the things they said just really sunk deep and resonated with me. And I was like, okay, maybe this is worth looking into, and I need to stop giving myself judgment on the label and what that means and what people think it means, and look into this myself, because I'm really struggling here. And I don't think I'd ever had so many different things I had to do that were all important. And I think, yeah, when they started all piling up, I'm like, okay, like, how do I deal with all this? So yeah, that actually was part of the reason I went and got diagnosed, and yeah, which has then helped me to start prioritizing to getting those systems and procedures in place and letting the people in my team know.
I'd love to hear, did the medication take away your creative spark? Because you are so creative. Like, for anyone that doesn't know Danny, she is an amazing kick-ass photographer. Did it affect your spark, your personality, your mood, any of that, or your creativity?
I've tried a couple of different meds, and I actually tried Ritalin, and that I feel like it did take that away a little bit. Actually, that wasn't great. It left me feeling a bit foggy headed and not amazing. You know what? It's funny. I only took it for 3 days. Actually, this was only just last week or the week before. I was on Vyvanse for a little while. And again, it's different for everyone. I really can't speak for medication as a whole. Like, if you are listening to this and you do have ADHD, or you might suspect that you do, or you're thinking about medication, at the start I was like, nah, I'm not taking medication. I don't want to take it. I'm not going to be one of those people that takes it. And it's funny. I guess you just don't know what it can do for you until you try it. Maybe that's the same with a lot of things in life. But yeah, I didn't know until I tried it. And when I started taking the Vyvanse, I did think that it was going to really dull me down. I was worried that I would lose a part of myself, but I didn't lose that part. I think it just accentuated who I was and made me able to be still me and creative and fun and exciting and sparkly, as my husband says. Like, able to think more clearly and able to function. It sounds so weird saying more systematically, but it kind of is, because, like, well, for me, without the medication, it feels really dysregulated. But with the medication, I can function better. How else do I describe it? Like, I can
get that makes sense
done. I can do tasks more easy. It's funny, like, the meds don't take away the symptoms, but they lessen them. So a lot of people ask me, does the medication, like, what does it do? How does it change things? Does it actually help? And it does. Like, it helps a lot, but it doesn't take it away. Like, having some really good systems and processes in place is super, super helpful. And so is seeing a psychologist. Couldn't recommend that highly enough. They really help give you the skills to work on, or, you know, or even talking through and going through the emotional stuff that you've carried from when you look back at the past and, you know, have that realization of, oh, I was like that because I had ADHD, or like, I did this or acted that way because I had ADHD. You're able to look back on your life with grace, which was really incredible. It makes you more operational. But I think if you take too much, that's when it can kind of can sometimes do the opposite effect. If you can get the right level, that's really, you know, helps your brain function better and work for your brain, then absolutely, yeah, it can do wonders. Like, I'm trying to think of a really good example. Like in photo shoots, for example, before I might still like have a really great result, but it might have taken me a lot longer to get there. I might have been more indecisive, or maybe I was a bit more stressed through the process. Like I couldn't think as clearly and make decisions as clearly. Whereas with the medication, it's like I can be more effective and I can make decisions and I can kind of even rationalize with myself a bit more. And, you know, just sort of even like that self-talk has changed a little bit, or even like the amount of grace that I give myself. It's like, instead of going, oh, that's so stupid, going, okay, no, like that's the ADHD talking. That's not me talking. I think it kind of, yeah, helps to just love yourself a little bit more and also accept yourself a bit more.
I love hearing that it's actually changed the relationship that you have with yourself in terms of your self-talk. And it sounds like it has been helpful. And I think for anyone that's listening, everything that we're sharing here, this is Dani's experience. But unless you speak to someone that can properly diagnose you, I don't think, one, we should self-diagnose. And I think, two, it's better to be sure and get diagnosed if you feel like it will be helpful than to not. And of course, like, get professional advice. This conversation needs to be heard by people that will make decisions that are best for themselves.
I want to just touch on that a little bit more, because if I can say, when I got that diagnosis, it was so life-changing for me to finally understand so much about myself. It's such a process, honestly. It took so long to get it. But when I got it and I started to understand what ADHD is and how it affects you and how it can affect the decisions you make, your friendships, the way that you are, there was actually a great stat. Now, don't quote me on this, but I think it's something like people growing up with ADHD can receive like up to 10,000 times more criticism than the average person in their lifetime. I'm pretty sure it's their lifetime.
Wow.
It actually might even be 100,000. Go and look it up, but don't quote me on it. But I listened to this amazing podcast about that, and I actually started to realize that I'd grown up with a lot of extra criticism.
And I'm guessing you also have self-criticism as well.
Yes. And that's what I was going to say. The amazing thing about it was that I actually started to realize I was way more self-critical, and I still can be quite harsh on myself and really judgmental on myself and the decisions I make or the mistakes I might make. So when I got the diagnosis, to be able to like look back on life and just look at my life with this perspective of grace was so powerful, and just go like, oh, like I wasn't horrible or awful, or it's okay that that happened, or it's okay that I did that. It was my brain, and it was the struggles I was experiencing and the things that I was facing and dealing with. Like it wasn't just me and who I was. I mean, it was who I was, but part of that was the dysregulation in the brain.
I think you and I've also touched on rejection sensitivity.
Rejection sensitivity dysphoria only exists in people with ADHD. That's been quoted to me by a couple of different psychologists. So as far as I know, that is true. No one else has it unless you have ADHD. And again, it comes from that extreme level of criticism that we can face. So I don't know about anyone else. I'd actually love to hear, if anyone's listening to this, I'd love to get some comments growing up, what that might have been like.
If you're listening to this, leave a comment, whether it's on the post, on the YouTube, or even on Spotify. You can leave comments now. And share, what was your experience growing up with ADHD, and have you experienced what Dani is referring to?
That's right. Yes. Okay. So growing up, the type of criticism that I would get would be like, oh, how many times do I have to ask you to do that? Why have you never managed to do this when I asked you to do this? Or why can't you just da 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 da? Or how hard is it to da da? Like all those things, I guess you get used to them. You don't realize that was my everyday. It was like this constant disappointment or criticism. And I never really realized that I ended up carrying that until I was an adult. And it does, it then starts to make you question yourself and sort of doubt yourself.
Do you think that rejection sensitivity dysphoria is something that young people with ADHD might experience in school, where they think differently to everybody else, so they're just not understood? Or is it more about being told off for putting off tasks or not delivering something
It's this like being told off, like putting off tasks, not getting things done. Like when you're rejected, it feels really harsh because you've copped a lot of criticism. And so it's almost like you begin to expect that. That's what it was like for me. And it's so funny because it even still is like that. And I actually experienced this even as an adult from different bosses and directors and people in authority. I would get this fear of judgment. And I can, like, I'll be honest, I still get it now sometimes because I've just grown up with that my whole life, because the main person of influence, that level of authority, your parents,
yeah,
they give that to you. And so you almost start to expect that from the other people that are in authority in your life or that are over you or that are asking you to maybe do a task, whether it's your boss, your director, or your maths teacher at school. And so this fear of judgment, because we fear that we might get it wrong, we might stuff up, or maybe we made a mistake, but it's because of that feeling that's developed from the mistakes we used to make. It's really interesting where it comes from, and it can come on different levels. Like when I got diagnosed, I also realized that I struggle with it with my friends as well. And I think you can do a lot of personal development to overcome that and get better. And I definitely am way better than I used to be, but I have to be careful sometimes not to overthink the things even my friends say to me and let that hurt really get to me, which is so much easier said than done. Because I guess, yeah, it's this perception, I think, again, that have a look, if you've never heard of it, read up on it and what it means, but it's overwhelming feeling and things just feel so much harsher to us than someone else maybe when they receive criticism or constructive criticism as well.
So according to Google, rejection sensitive dysphoria is an intense emotional reaction to perceived rejection or criticism, not a formal diagnosis, that causes extreme emotional pain and distress. Common in people with ADHD and autism, it can manifest as low self-esteem, social avoidance, emotional outbursts, or people-pleasing behaviors. While there is no official treatment for RSD, strategies include building self-esteem, practicing self-compassion, and seeking professional support for emotional regulation.
I'm going to totally interrupt you. I really want to know if you struggle with that. Like, have you felt that before? Like that extreme, I really like that it says extreme pain, because it actually really does feel extremely painful. I'm so sorry to cut you off. I was like, I would love to know.
Maybe not so much like rejection sensitive dysphoria from a task or something, but I've definitely had, like, for example, I help my dad with his invoicing, and I've just shared at the start of this episode that I hate tax and invoicing, and that's something that I outsource, and I outsource to professionals because they're good at it, and I just do the simplest thing that I can, but tax preparation time is very overwhelming, and I feel like I have had arguments which could have been avoided if there was more grace, if the other person understood how my brain works, and that telling me to do something that I'm that uninterested in and expecting that I will just drop everything and do it is just not possible, especially if I'm being told while I'm in the middle of doing something, which often was the case. And I found that I would usually be told when I'm trying to like be present and enjoy my dinner with my family and just be grateful for their presence, but they're like, oh, by the way, can you go and do this, or can you put this up on Facebook Marketplace for me? And I felt really guilty about it. I've taken days, if not weeks, to the point where they've gotten really angry at me, and I've had to just say, I'm really sorry, but if you don't send it to me in WeChat, it's not going to happen, because I need something that will trigger a mental note, right? So sending me a message, I always get shit done when it's been sent to me in a WhatsApp message, WeChat, text message, email. But my dad at the time refused to send it to me via WeChat. He just thought that was ridiculous. So I don't know if it's rejection sensitivity, but I do know that I have felt very, very sensitive to rejection in my life.
Yeah.
Especially in high school and even in my 20s and my 30s. I remember there was one time, it was here actually, and I was with my girlfriends. We were catching up and they had no intention to make me feel this way. So this is all on me, right? So in my mind, so what happened was I was running late. We were all catching up in South Yarra for a coffee, for a chai latte, actually. Back then, chais were
they were
in demand. Yeah. And I was running late, you know, mm-hmm. things were all over the place, frantic. I'm walking out the door and then I realize I haven't grabbed this or something. Like, I used to be constantly late to things. I've now been able to really work through that, like systems and order. But I was late and they moved from meeting at the dog park to somewhere else without telling me.
Oh, no.
And I felt so hurt and so upset. I think I cried that day. I think I actually felt like I was just rejected. I felt like I didn't matter and that they'd just forgotten about me. I didn't feel like they didn't want me there or anything like that, but I just felt like I didn't matter. I think it could be rejection sensitivity. I'm not sure. But
and it hurt, yeah.
It really hurt. Like now looking back, I'm like, that was so silly. But back then, I couldn't actually understand that they were probably just done with their chai and they wanted to go to the dog park.
Yeah, like Phoebe's like half an hour late. Like
I don't remember the order of it, but I just remember the pain.
Yeah.
So I do know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Okay, cool. I'm glad because
absolutely it happens.
Yeah. Oh, I could think of so many occasions where I've felt that in friendships, 100%. And even the other part of friendships is not being able to keep them. Or like I remember this one distinct time a few years ago, actually, it was probably more 5 or 6 years ago, and I still feel bad about it to this day. I made a plan with this friend to go for dinner. And like great friend, I'm so excited to see her. She's really bubbly and extroverted. We get along really well. I was working in Warrigal at the time, so I was meant to go meet her in Warrigal for dinner before going back home to the southeast suburbs. And anyway, one of my friends who, like my best friend, called me just before I finished work and was like, hey, like I'm really not doing great. Can you come over? Like I just want to go have some fun and do something really like just spontaneous and whatever. And I was like, oh yeah, of course. Like absolutely, I would love to. Like how exciting. Like, woo! Suddenly, like this was the most exciting thing in my day. And I totally forgot that I was meant to go to dinner with my friend, like my really good friend who I valued and really wanted to go to dinner with. And like, it was just one of those little things, you know, and I wasn't even necessarily.
I am a stickler for my calendar these days.
Now I am. I'm really, like, really good at it. Back then, not as much. I was still organized, definitely organized. And I had things in my calendar. I like had the reminder there. But for some reason, I blanked, like just completely blanked, forgot
that
about
happens.
The plan.
I actually didn't realize that last week I bought tickets to an event and because I didn't put it in my calendar, completely forgot that it was on. And it wasn't until Monday that I was going through my inbox and it was like, oh, input your details for this event. And I'm like, oh, I'm really excited about this event. I'm filling out the form. I'm like, yes, I'm founder. I'm here for networking, blah, blah. And then I realized it was last Friday.
No. So you missed it.
So I missed it. I paid for it and I missed it.
And you paid for it.
So if it's not in my calendar, like I run by my calendar.
Yeah.
I have to have, I don't run my weekends by my calendar. That's different. But
your work life.
My work life, my business, everything has to be straight in the calendar because the moment I hop off a Zoom call and I haven't put it in the calendar, I'll give you another example, Danny. Last week I was on a call with a prospective client and we had a meeting scheduled for Monday. And
this is a forgetfulness topic. Yeah.
Yeah, we're talking about forgetfulness.
Forgetfulness part.
Yeah. And so we scheduled to catch up the following work day, which was Monday. And so we said 12 o'clock. So we're like, yep, 12 o'clock. So I put in my calendar, I just typed C-A-L.
Wait, that's me? No, this wasn't
This wasn't you. So I put it in my calendar and I was wanting to be present because I'm very big on being present. I try not to multitask. If I'm talking to a client, I'm there. So I just put C-A-L in the 12 o'clock time slot, which means nothing. It was just calendar or whatever. Just the thought. I was like, I'll fill this in after the call. Finished the call and I knew that I needed to send her my slide deck. But then I had another meeting on. So I have that meeting and I'm like, no, I've got to get this slide deck sent through. I've got to do it. I've got it. So I'm fixated on that most important task, which is sending her our slide deck, which is a deck that explains our services and our offerings and our pricing. So I did that. I did all the right things. I sent the email. I sent the slide deck. I finished all my meetings that day. I felt really great, really productive. And then it was a weekend. So it's weekend, switch off. Right. Monday comes, open up the calendar at 12. I see at 12 o'clock, there's something that says C-A-L and I have no idea. I have Absolutely no idea.
Just means
who I'm having a meeting with. I knew that I had set a mental note to have a meeting with someone and I had absolutely no idea who it was. I went through my phone list, like the calls that I had made the week before. Nothing. Thankfully, with AI note taking, every single thing, every word is recorded. And thankfully, I found it and I went, I had a meeting with that prospect. Yeah. And I sent her the calendar invite just an hour before the meeting. And she still showed up. So good on her.
And she never knew.
And she never knew.
You forgot.
But the stress that I was experiencing that Monday morning, because I was like, oh my gosh, like this could be a really important meeting.
Vibes of your mind to try and dig out the info. Like, what was it? Who was it?
Yeah, because I talk to so many people every day, right? But in that moment, I completely blanked. I had no, unless I was able to go through my phone book or the recordings from my Zooms the previous week, I had no idea who I was supposed to have that meeting with. So
yeah.
I cannot stress enough how important it is to have your systems and your processes in place, especially as a business owner, because if you don't have your systems and your processes, things will just be a complete mess. There will be no structure to your day. And speaking of structure, routine is also really important on top of having systems and processes. So when you have all of that, when you've got your routine, you've got your systems and processes and support, I can't stress enough how important it is to delegate and to have people doing the tasks that are mundane, doing the repetitive spreadsheeting or the low dopamine tasks that you don't like, because you will end up putting things off. So having them in place has been a game changer for my business.
And even having a friend as well, that you can talk about all the things that you're struggling with, all the things that you're forgetful with.
Oh, my goodness.
That also is really helpful.
And it actually really makes you feel like I'm not alone. Like, wow, there's other people out there that experience.
Oh, she forgets things too.
Yeah.
She gets people down too.
I wanted to know, Danny, do you find it really challenging to keep up with like responding to texts? Or I guess it's not so much keeping up with everybody because there's not an expectation of that. But do you find it challenging to respond to texts? And yes. Do you find it challenging to like reply to someone and just to say I'm alive or that you're doing well?
Yeah, the overwhelm is real.
Like I sometimes really delay replying to text messages because I feel like I either have to do it all in one go when it's unread, but if it's read, my brain has completely parked that aside and I've completely forgotten.
Yeah.
So another system. So we have microsystems that we're not even aware of that we've developed over time. So one of my microsystems is I always keep things as unread or I pin them to the top of the chat in WhatsApp if it's really, really important. I mean, whether or not you ignore it is another thing and put it off, but having those microsystems actually really help.
I think part of the overwhelm can be the decision-making, the everyday decision-making. There is something about the little tasks that need to be done, the everyday tasks, the mundane tasks that for neurotypical people, you wouldn't even probably think twice about it and being able to do it. Things that you just accept that you have to do as an adult, the washing, the dishes, the ironing, putting things away. Sometimes those little things can just feel so overwhelming. It's like I've got to decide to then put this here or do this now or make this happen. And it can be, it's hard to explain. It can be that constant like feeling of go, go, go. Like you've got to do one thing and then the next thing and then the next thing. Sometimes you're actually giving all your energy to do those little tasks that can be for us really hard and be quite tricky and or take a while or take extra energy. Sometimes that actually can lead to that burnout or overwhelm feeling. And then you literally, like your best friend in the world sends you a text and maybe they're super emotional or happy or whatever it is that they're contacting you about. They tell you they love you or it's about their day or whatever it is. And more than anything, you want to reply to that message and love on that person or get back to them straight away because maybe you're excitable and you've got ADHD or maybe it's just that you really value that person and you want to reply. But because you've actually spent all your energy on these little things that have to be get done, like in adulthood.
That you have to remember.
Yeah, that you have to remember. Like just giving a bit of your emotions to take to reply to that text can actually
really draining.
Feel a lot like, yeah, really draining.
I've definitely seen you at the end of a work night, like really tired.
Have you?
Like at Planet Business last week, you were saying that you had a headache, and I see that it was a lot, like you'd had a big day. And I know that you really soldiered on to come, and good on you for coming, because it felt so good having you beside me.
Yeah, it was. It was nice, wasn't it?
But I used to fill my calendar with events. It was insane. Like, I had so many business related events and then social events. And then when I started dating, I had dates I had to go on, and it all got too much. And the first thing that goes is replying to dates. That's the least of my priority.
Low on the
priority list. And when you are trying to be a good friend, we balance a lot, and things do take more energy. I do find that it is easy to get to the end of the week. Friday nights, I'm zonked. I've learned to now rarely book in any event, date,
that's
catch
good.
Up, except having you over for dinner and talking about ADHD.
I loved that.
That was really fun.
That was fun.
I rarely book in Friday nights. Mm. I really keep it to myself now, because that's my recharge.
Yeah.
And Saturdays are a me and Evie day as well. Like, Evie and I go out into nature, we go for long walks, and I recharge. Mm. So that church comes along on Sunday and I'm like, woohoo, I'm ready to see people again.
Or Friday's that day where you've done all your decision making constantly and nonstop for 5 days in a row. That's what gets me. It's that constant decision-making, especially being a business owner.
Decision-making fatigue is a thing as well for people with ADHD.
It is. It is decision fatigue. And that for me is like why I can read a text and pick it up and just go, oh, I can't. Because it's that making another decision. It might be deciding on a date to catch up or
a time.
Actually, sometimes if you're a really serial overthinker, like I can be at times, it actually might just be you're reading it and you've typed the message out. Oh my gosh, how many people have done this? Probably you type it out 5 times over, maybe even 10 times over, and you just can't decide. You just can't decide what to reply. You're like, oh, no, like they'll judge me for that. Oh, no, that sounds weird. Or da. And we overthink it. And then I just go, nah, too hard, down, I'm not replying. And then that poor person, hopefully it's not a good friend, doesn't hear from me for like a month. And it's not because I don't love them or value them. I really do, but I just don't know how.
So I've gone from being that sensitive person to really take things personally now.
Yeah.
Like, I've gone to the other extreme, because if someone doesn't reply, I understand now. I have the concept that they are probably just busy. So I would never take it personally if a friend now, has delays in responding, especially if I know that they're neurospicy. But for the listeners out there that do experience that, where you feel a bit ghosted or something, sometimes it is a good idea to maybe put yourself in their shoes or just ask, like, hey, are you okay? Like, or call them. That obviously breaks the pattern or the cycle, because sometimes just another text is more to respond to, right? Like, if I send you another text when you haven't responded to a previous text, does it feel like it's even adding more to the load? Is that even more overwhelming? Or
I guess it depends what it is. If it's like a checking in, hey, how are you doing? Are you all right? Well, then it's kind of like, okay, that almost feels easy. It's like, well, I know how I'm feeling. I know how I'm going. It's just my choice to then be authentic and actually answer you honestly.
So it's more the like, should we meet on Wednesday or Friday, where you're like, it's like, don't ask me that. That's really hard.
I can't decide. I haven't worked this out and that out, and I haven't worked my week out. And it's funny. I think that's a really good point you made. I love that. Is like, and this is something I guess we can all do with all of our friends and with everyone in life, is try and approach things with a perception of grace and understanding first rather than judgment. It's, you just don't know how someone's feeling. Even if they express how they might be feeling, you still might actually not 100% know how they're feeling on the inside. And I guess especially for people that have ADHD or neurospicy, having that extra self-judgment or that extra condemnation that we maybe put on ourselves, or, the feeling bad, like the bad feelings, the feeling bad or feeling guilty, which, oh my goodness, we could talk on another whole podcast about the shame and the guilt that can sometimes come with that, is actually just, remembering to go, hey, this person could potentially be really struggling in their emotions right now, or maybe they're actually trying to accept something in themselves, or they're actually really judging themselves right now that they haven't been able to decide which day they want to catch up with you for some reason. It's just a really hard decision to make for them right now. It's having that kind of understanding and acceptance instead of judging first, to initially go, okay, maybe they are actually just really fatigued, or they're overwhelmed. They've got that ADHD overwhelm, or they've been making a lot of decisions this week and it just, they've got no capacity to make another decision at the moment. And that's okay. I just need to give them a little bit of time or give them a bit of extra understanding or love.
Yeah.
So important. And I honestly, that's been one of the most amazing things about going on this journey is that grace for myself, having to have that grace for myself and starting to learn that self-compassion is, oh, it's so hard.
Speaking of grace, to wrap up this episode, I wanted to ask for anyone that has a partner with ADHD, what are some things that you're grateful for in your partner? Because the way he gives, whether it's giving you grace or patience, etc., and how can people who are partners of people with who are neurospicy, how can they be more supportive?
I love this question. Yeah, I get to talk about my husband. Yay. How can they be more supportive? Oh, patience is a really good one. Oh, look, again, I feel like so honored and special that I can even be talking about this. I'm no expert, but we've been married for just under 2.5 years. And it's funny because I actually found out that I had ADHD after we got married. So he always jokes about being like, I married you and I sealed the deal and then you like sprung this on me. Like I didn't know. It's so funny. I'm like, sorry, babe. I guess, you know, here I am. So it's been fun because we've actually been finding out a lot about me together. And it's wild because I was 32 when I got the diagnosis. And so you kind of go like, oh, I'm discovering all these parts of me and who I am again. I'm 32, like I should already know that. I should have a great understanding of who I am and my identity. And you do, but it's like you're
I think even people in their 40s don't necessarily know who they are. I think there's nothing wrong with finding out that you have ADHD or autism or whatever at any age. I think it's great to know. And so you and Maddie navigated that recently. So it was, you know, probably a year or two ago. Firstly, how did he respond apart from you sprung that on me and
surprise, babe.
And what were some of the surprises that you had with Maddie's reaction and the way he's been able to just like support you and be there for you?
Look, it's like, it's again, it's such a process. It's kind of, it still is a process of understanding how I think, how I am, what things affect me, what things I struggle with, what things are the things he's going to need to be extra supportive and understanding is I'm actually really blessed to already have a really patient husband.
He's lovely.
He's so beautiful. He's like super patient and he's actually the most patient person I know in the whole world. So he was already really patient before that. But yeah, I guess it's just kind of been learning how to communicate when I'm struggling with a task or if I'm feeling like really overwhelmed, I'm so bubbly next to Retta, right? If I'm really overwhelmed, I can just get really withdrawn and it's weird to say quiet, but sometimes when it's bad, I can get really quiet and I can be really burnt out. And sometimes I can actually have to be careful that I don't get a little bit defensive or maybe.
Is that like when you're in a room full of people on a weeknight after work and there's a lot of overstimulation? Would that be an example?
Yeah, that could be an example. It could also just be me and him at home. And it's just that I've had like a really big day of decision making or it's just been like a big day of shooting or like I know I've got something coming up for that weekend. I'm trying to process everything and think about it and think it through and make this plan that can wear me out. And so I just have to be careful that when I'm really low energy and low capacity, I'm really mindful of just my like how I talk to him and the words that I use and the tone I use, I'm starting to get better at actually like, hey, babe, just so you know, I'm just like, I'm really burnt out. Actually, it's funny. We have really good banter, but some days when I'm really low energy or low capacity, we're really funny. If you see us together, we can have times where we're just like banter back and forth, like constantly, like we'll just joking. We're both really silly and playful and we'll just go back and forth. But yeah, sometimes like I just have to say to him, hey, babe, like, let's just cut the banter. I actually just need to be quiet for a little while. I need to chill out and I just need to be on my own for a little bit. But it can be really hard for me to say that because I'm not used to admitting that I need that time and space because I think I'm still trying to accept that part of the ADHD is needing to just like being okay with just chilling out and not being super bubbly and extroverted all the time and actually going, hey, I need to just look after my energy and it's okay. I can lower my tone. I can lower my pace and I can still be an awesome person and a great person to be around and a fun person, but I can actually just be a bit more low key and that's okay. And like a genuine friend like Phoebe still going to love me and she'll understand that that's what I need in that moment and that that's okay to be that version of me too. So that's been also really amazing.
Thank you so much for sharing. I think that every single person who has ADHD has different variations and different symptoms or different experiences. And for those that are listening, I hope that you've gained a lot of value and just had fun and enjoyed this episode. I definitely have, and I have so much to share, even just from what you've just shared, like the way you experience overwhelm or overstimulation is so different to the way I experience overwhelm and overstimulation. And yeah, I've got 2 minutes if you want to hear this.
I do. Okay. Everyone else, but
so
tell me. Yeah, because I'm curious because
as you probably have heard, my mum's very, very overwhelming. And I've shared this with friends and think I've openly shared this before, but my mum can be very, very critical and very overstimulating and full on. I'm pretty sure that she has probably got ADHD as well.
I think my mum does too.
Yeah. And it's definitely not systemized like mine. I don't think she's worked out the systems and it's very
she hasn't got scattered.
Yeah. So the conversations we have, there's lots of interruptions and I get very frustrated. I actually don't really like being interrupted because I really have trained so hard to keep to the same thought and to not have lots of thoughts. So when I
we've done really well today.
So when I get interrupted, I actually feel like I have to go back, like I have to continue that thought. And I feel like then I have like a tab that's open in my mind. So she does that a lot. And my mum can be very, very critical and very loud and very, very overwhelming and overstimulating.
Wow.
So a lot of the time when I'm in a restaurant with my mum, my dad, like everyone's there and there's noise and background noise. And then she's talking at me and there's conversations, you know, being had at the same time. And I'm hearing my dad and my stepdad having a conversation on the right side of my ear and my mum's talking at me. It's really, really, really overwhelming and overstimulating. And sometimes I can almost snap and I feel like, oh, I just, now I'm that like angry person. I've just gotten angry at my mum when she's just really trying to get my attention. But she couldn't get my attention because she doesn't realize that I'm actually really overwhelmed and overstimulated in that moment. So for me, overwhelm and overstimulation looks like everything just becomes really noisy and all I want to do is just sink into my chair or just go to a quiet space or like look down at my phone and just not be there and I dissociate or I snap if it gets too bad.
Those anger outbursts are real, I tell you. I would love to know how many people get the anger outbursts. I'm sure they are because it does, it can build up. I remember when I was dating Maddie, just super quickly, I know we're meant to be wrapping up. When I was dating Maddie, before I found out that I even started thinking about the fact that I might have had it, I was at his place one time. We were, it was probably 9 p.m. We had the doors open. He lived in a city apartment on like the 14th floor, or you get all the, you can hear all the cars and the motorbikes going down below, which is usually fine. But there was this one point where there was like 5 motorbikes went past in a row and I was so loud. I'm not even joking.
Oh my God.
I don't know what happened, what came over me. I got up. I was like, oh, I like grabbed the door and I slammed it shut. I was like, oh, like I can't do that. My face was probably really weird right then, but you get it, right? It just, sometimes it is so overwhelming and you just want to pop. You're like, I can't deal.
Yeah. I totally understand. I totally get that.
We're going to share some stories later.
Yeah, we're going to share some stories. But yeah, like every single person's experience and of that is different. And I think that giving yourself grace, giving your partner or the other person or your friend or your colleague grace is definitely good. And knowing their triggers, knowing your triggers, being self-aware is one of the most crucial parts of living in general, of life in general. And if we don't have self-awareness, how do we build those systems and microsystems, right? So in future episodes and in a few upcoming episodes that we have lined up, we are actually going to talk about and hear from other NeuroSpicy business owners and professionals. And we're going to talk about the systems and processes that those women have put together. So I'm really excited to share that episode. And once again, thank you guys so much for tuning in. Leave your comments or your questions below, whether it's on YouTube or Spotify or Facebook and Instagram and LinkedIn. And let us know, what do you experience? And most importantly, how do you overcome some of those challenges of being neurodivergent or neurospicy?
Awesome.
And Danny, it was such a pleasure to have you. I am so
grateful
for having me. All your time. It was so lovely. And thank you so much for sharing so vulnerably and sharing your experience with
us. Thank you. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to do that.
Love you lots. Good. Got to give you a hug. It was an absolute pleasure, and I can't wait to have you back on the show.
Yeah, me too.
So thanks for tuning in, and I look forward to seeing you inspired to thrive.